Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
Live from the Ridge at Castle Pines, site of today's stop on Michelob Ultra's Fan Golf Tour, presented by Superbook Sports and the GC Lounge. Here's Brandon Stokely and DenverFan.com's James Marillac.
Castle Pines North, the latest stop on the Fan Golf Tour. Players are starting to roll in. These are the early arrivers, Stoke. These are the guys that must be taking it serious. They're here for plenty of time on the practice range.
They're getting here early. I love it. It's get some range time, right?
Yeah.
Get out of the house time. You know, anytime you want to play golf, you want to get there early. You know, enjoy the beautiful day. You got to get checked in. You know, either you want to get range time, or you know, when you get older, James, you know, you got to get
stretching time,
stretch, loosen up. You know, you just can't go to the first tee anymore. So
right. You
got to be prepared. You know, because you feel it that next day if you don't get stretched out and loosened out before. But it's a beautiful day out here. I love the Ridge. It's a great golf course, scenic. Got everything that you want. So it's going to be a packed house today out there, and just looking forward to it, and glad to be out here. And you know, once again, looking forward to dominating you again on air. You've been talking trash leading up to today.
Talking trash? Yeah, when was this?
Do you not remember in the hallway?
Tuesday?
Yeah, just two days ago, James. I mean, did you forget that? No, I'm looking forward to a fun show, and what better place to do it than out here on the golf course at the Ridge?
Yeah, this is fantastic. If you're not coming out here today, that's okay. You still have other chances to join us at one of the Fan Golf Tour stops. Go to DenverFan.com. You can sign up. I think the next one is August 9th at the Pinery, so that would be a good opportunity to be a part of this as well. It's a very cool event. We'll be having a lot of fun out here today. Stoke, a lot to talk about. There are things you and I were bantering about on Tuesday in the hallway that I want to get to. It's, you know, the Teddy versus Drew stuff. I feel like everybody's kind of coming around to my way of thinking on this, that a competition is a bad idea. It's silly, an exercise in futility.
You're acting like Zach right now. I mean, that's common sense.
Well,
I mean, that's common. I mean, you want us to give you a star for something that, like, the whole world knows?
Yeah.
I mean, we all understand that a competition is never good for your football team. Never, ever. When in the history of football has a competition been good for a football team at the quarterback position? It just doesn't happen.
I agree.
Okay.
I was saying this back in December, Stoke, and everybody was like, what do you got against competition? Competition's good. That's what you do in sports. It's football. So, you're speaking common sense now. I'm with you.
Well, competition is good at every other position but quarterback. Okay, that's
exactly
where you draw the line. It's not good at the quarterback position, but you know what? The Broncos, what other choice do they have? I mean, what do you want Vic to really do? What do you want George Payton to really do? When you don't go out there and get the guy that can be the starter, Drew Lock didn't do enough last year to be the starter. Teddy Bridgewater certainly hasn't done enough to be anointed the starter. So what would you want them to do in their current situation?
Well, I think they had a lot of paths they could have gone down when last season ended.
Yes.
I think they picked the worst possible route. So, and I wrote a column about this on DenverFan.com if you want to check it out. But just to kind of go through it real quick.
Give us the cliff notes.
The cliff notes, yes, exactly.
Paraphrase.
The audio version of my column.
That's more of my style.
The first thing they could have done was you go out and you upgrade with a veteran, right? You go get Matthew Stafford. And don't tell me, oh, we took a shot, we didn't get him. Well, that's on you. Then make a better offer.
They tried. They just couldn't get him.
You go out and get a veteran. Carson Wentz, Matthew Stafford, Deshaun Watson before all the legal issues, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick, Andy Dalton, the list went on and on and on. So you could have gone that way. You could have gone and, you know what, we're going to go a potential upgrade, and you draft Justin Fields or Mac Jones. You don't have to mortgage anything. They fell into your lap at number 9.
Yeah.
You go that route. Or here's the other thing that I think would have made more sense. There was a route they could have gone down and had the exact same quarterbacks they have right now, that at least would have made more sense is you just say, look, we have a really good roster. We believe in Drew. He's our guy. When he has a full offseason and a second year with Pat, things are going to be fine. He had a good, you know, last quarter of the season, but we need to bring in a veteran backup because we have a playoff caliber roster. And if something happens to Drew, we need somebody that's ready to be there, and it's Teddy. Then you're not going through this nonsense of a competition. You're not taking half the reps away from Drew, right? Because you can't tell me that there was a problem that he missed OTAs and that he didn't have a regular camp and didn't have preseason games last year, and that was the problem, and then take half those reps away.
Well, that
from
was
him
part of the problem also is a new offense.
Okay.
It's not a new offense this year. But how can you just anoint Drew as the starter in this situation? I mean, don't you think the locker room would kind of look at each other and at Vic like, did you not watch this guy play last year? And Vic, of all people, isn't going to do that because his butt's on the line and Drew played not good last year. I mean,
well,
below not good. I mean, he played really bad last year, and you're just going to anoint that guy the starting quarterback and not even have a competition. I think in their current situation, that's all they could really do. Now, could they have done some things before and maneuvered around and done a few things and maybe try to get an upgrade better than Drew and Teddy? Yes, they could, but they didn't, and now they're stuck in this situation, and this is their only route now.
If they'd have gone the route I'm talking about, right now we would know Drew was the starter heading into camp. Everybody on that roster, especially on offense, would know who to look toward. They would have known during the offseason, hey, who should be putting together passing camps and getting us together at Duke and throwing the football around and doing those kind of things. They would have had the leader.
Yes.
And they would have known, you know what, if he gets hurt, or in the back of everyone's mind, we're all grown-ups, right? Everybody would have known, hey, if he plays like garbage, we got a guy we can go to. We got a backup plan, but he's our starter. I think that would have made so much more sense than going into training camp and we're going to go 50-50 on reps. We're going to get the same questions every day. We're going to get guys like us, you know, saying who won this day, who won that day. It's just such a distraction. And it's also, you're also admitting that you have not been able to evaluate Drew Locke, right? Like, so you've had him on the roster for more than two calendar years. You've gone through two training camps with him. He started 18 games for you, and you can't make a definitive determination if he's your guy or not guy. You're not your guy.
Well, they told us that they don't think he is.
They should have moved on.
They have told us that they don't think he is. They have tried to upgrade that position, and for whatever reason, that might be the biggest mistake here is, you've kind of – you're straddling the line here. You know, you're aggressive in certain regards, right? Bringing back Von Miller on really just a one-year deal.
Yeah.
Not getting him extended and just paying him the type of money that you paid him, after him missing all of last year and the year before having a subpar year. Paying Shelby Harris, a ton of money when the year before nobody would pay him. And making the move for Fuller, paying him on a one-year deal.
Yep.
Making the move for Dar. I mean, you have paid a lot of money, re-signing Justin Simmons, saying win now mode. But at the quarterback position, you're saying not win now mode. You're saying, we'll wait and see at that position. So when I look at George Payton, I'm kind of confused by, hey, were you going to be really aggressive this offseason to win right now for Vic? Yeah, you did. But at the most important position, you didn't. So that, to me, is confusing, and that's where they've kind of lost their way here with the quarterback position, and they're kind of stuck in a bad spot. I mean, I get what you're saying. I understand it. Just name a starting quarterback. But unfortunately for me, in this situation, this is the best that they can do, and you got to have a competition. Is it ideal? Heck no. No.
But
I mean, it's ridiculous to have a quarterback competition, but when you don't have one, this is what you're stuck doing.
A competition, though, that you're is setting it up to where, hey, we're bringing in a guy that we can't definitively say is better than someone who was in the bottom four quarterbacks in the league last year.
Did you see Teddy Bridgewater last year? He was awful also.
Right.
They both stunk. I mean, that's the facts.
It's
they
like
both
the 32nd
terrible.
And 33rd right. best quarterback in the league right
so now.
So now
we got to have I mean, how can you pick one? I mean, how can you look at that roster? So say you pick Drew Locke. Say you pick Drew Locke and like, hey, Drew Locke's our starter. And all of a sudden in camp, he is looking like Drew Locke of last year, throwing the ball all over the place, going, not going through reads and progressions, forcing the issue, and just looking lost in the preseason games. And Teddy Bridgewater's looking like more of a stable force back there and just being that veteran quarterback presence that, that you want if you're the Denver Broncos, then what do you do? See, I think that's the that that's the problem there if you go out in front of this thing and make a guy like Drew the starter, because if he's not playing well, now what do you do? You can't just bench him before the first game.
Well, gosh, if you're thinking he may fall on his face in training camp to the point
where Did you watch last year? I mean,
yeah,
he was the worst quarterback in all of football. I'm not projecting him to do it. I don't want him to do it. But he was downright awful, James. Let's not forget that.
I saw him against Carolina. He was really good. I saw him in L.A. against the Chargers, that if Jerry Jeudy doesn't drop five passes,
yeah,
he has a really good game.
That's right.
I saw him in Vegas, the four interception game. Have some good moments. Like, he gets that whole game put on him, which is letting Vic Fangio and his defense
of all people, James,
off
come on
the hook.
Come on. Hey,
there are plenty of examples where he showed me he could play more than Teddy Bridgewater did last year.
James, he's an NFL quarterback. If he didn't have a couple moments, he wouldn't even be on the Broncos roster right now. So yes, I mean, that's the bare minimum. You're going through like the bare minimum here of, oh yeah, Drew played good in this game. He played in this game pretty good in this game. And oh, by the way, that four interception game, don't worry about those four interceptions. It wasn't all on him. It wasn't as bad as it seemed. So you're using that as a positive. I'm with you. Those weren't all on him. I watched that game again about 2 months ago. They weren't all on him. The offensive line was awful. The protection was awful. But he's got to learn when not to make a bad play worse. And that's what he did in that football game a few times because they were he was getting just absolutely destroyed. But you can't just look at two situations and say that – you know, this guy, you know, he showed us some moments. Now, he didn't show us enough moments.
Okay, but it, in terms of things we agree on here, one, having a quarterback competition is a disaster because it's basically the old adage, if you have two quarterbacks, you have none, is out there for a reason. It's basically saying the Broncos don't have a starting caliber quarterback. That's essentially what they've said.
Yes.
Unless Drew Locke makes this leap, which that means your plan is hope. And I think that's a disaster. And it's also saying that my original thesis was correct of they could not have handled this situation worse this offseason. They had a lot of different ways they could have gone, and they picked the absolute worst path to have gone down. Matthew Stafford would have been better, Carson Wentz would have been better, Justin Fields would have been better, Mac Jones would have been. I mean, we can rattle them off.
Well, I don't know about Justin Fields or Mac Jones. I'm not sure about those guys. And Teddy Bridgewater has been a good quarterback in this league. We can't forget that. Did he have a great year last year? No. But he was also in the same situation as every other quarterback that was with the team for their first year. Right, he didn't have an off season with Joe Brady and that first year offense and a young offense and a football team that frankly wasn't that good in Carolina, and then right. They lose their best player. He doesn't play hardly at all in Christian McCaffrey. So it wasn't like a great situation for him. Now you put Teddy Bridgewater in a good situation, that's what the Broncos are looking at. Put him in a good situation. Not comparing the Broncos to the Saints, but when he was with the Saints and filled in for Drew Brees, he was 5-0. So I think that's what they're hoping that he can deliver here. But at the same time, it wasn't good enough last year. So you're not going to bring him here and anoint him as the starter. So I'm not sure about Mac Jones and Justin Fields if they're a huge upgrade over what we have now. They could both be a complete disaster. Now, you look at a guy like Matthew Stafford, of course. But apparently they weren't willing to pony up what it took to get a guy like that. You look at a guy like Carson Wentz. I'm leery on him. I don't know if he's scarred up a little bit too much and took too much damage last year, but certainly his potential's greater than the other two guys.
Well, and let me, I guess, rephrase how I put it in terms of Justin Fields and Mac Jones. I'm with you. We don't know that they're an upgrade. There's a potential upgrade. But had they gone down any of these other routes, I'll ask you this question. Would we be talking every single day about Aaron Rodgers if they had drafted Justin Fields? If they had drafted Mac Jones,
no.
If they had traded for Matthew Stafford, if they had traded for Carson Wentz, we wouldn't be,
no.
Because it would have been a plan that provided a solution or a likely solution or a potential solution. None of us think this is a solution. I mean, right now it's either you hope that Drew Locke makes the leap, right? Because of didn't have an off season, first year with Pat Shurmur, didn't have preseason, all those things.
Yeah.
Or you hope that Matt Rhule is a complete idiot and didn't know how to evaluate Teddy Bridgewater. Because for Teddy Bridgewater to work out, it has to be the guys who spent every day with him a year ago, just totally whiffed on evaluating him, and he can still play, I think that's highly unlikely.
Right, and I understand that when you're looking at Teddy Bridgewater, but just because it didn't work out in Carolina doesn't mean it's not going to work out somewhere. This guy has won games in the NFL. He's played really well at the quarterback position in the NFL. So just because it didn't work out in Carolina with, you know, Brady and Rule over there on a bad football team, they were obviously looking to take that next step at the quarterback position,
yeah.
Right? They were looking for the big upgrade. And I think they whiffed out on a few guys, and obviously they would be in on an Aaron Rodgers or a you know, Deshaun Watson, you know, earlier in the offseason type of situation. They couldn't make anything like that happen. They went with guy from the Jets, who they trade
Sam
for?
Darnold.
Sam Darnold. And, you know, that's the route they're going down. But they were looking for a big upgrade and a younger quarterback, a guy that they could, you know, build that franchise around. And they knew that wasn't Teddy Bridgewater, so they weren't going to waste another year.
Yeah.
They weren't going to do it. But that doesn't mean he can't come here and be a perfect starter for the Denver Broncos.
Would you feel better if Sam Darnold was here? If the Broncos starter heading into this season was Sam Darnold?
Well, James.
We would.
Well, you asked me the question. You can't answer it for me. I'll answer the stinking question.
We would.
Let me think about this because I don't want to agree with you right now. I'll tell you this. I'm not sold on Sam Darnold, but I would feel better about it because, you know what, there's still an unknown there.
Yeah.
We still don't know what that potential. Can he reach that potential outside of that disaster that was the New York Jets? So you would keep your fingers crossed? I'd say no. But I'm not looking at either one of these guys we have now, and I don't feel great about them. I don't feel like they're going to be the answer in 4 or 5 years. So, you know, throw Sam Darnold in the mix. It's kind of how I probably feel a little bit better than the two that we have, but not all that much better.
I think it's more likely that Sam Darnold was just in a bad situation in New York with all that pressure of being the third pick in that market. Adam Gase and the disaster that just organization was while he was there.
It was bad.
Was a worse situation, and he needed a change of scenery.
But more if you than, can't handle the pressure, I don't care if you're in New York, Carolina, Denver, L.A., I mean, there's pressure playing the quarterback position. Obviously, it's ramped up in New York to a certain degree, but you know, you got to be able to perform. And if you can't get over that hurdle, then quarterback in the NFL is probably not for you.
So, just to recap, you agree with me that the Broncos could not have handled this situation worse this offseason?
I do. Yeah, I mean, this was probably the last on the list of things that how you wanted your quarterback situation to look going.
Yeah.
The last thing that you wanted. Now, you still have Aaron Rodgers' time. I don't think it's going to happen. But this, if you go through the whole checklist, this is the last one. I mean, right? Drew and Teddy competing?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Yeah.
It's the worst possible option.
Right. It's especially the way they handle the rest of the roster. That's what we got to remember. They are in win-now mode with the rest of the roster, except for the quarterback position.
Yeah. It doesn't make sense.
It's
why, you know, like in San Francisco, the GM and the head coach are on the same timeline, right? Where here, it doesn't make sense because you've got a GM that can be, I can be patient. You got
right.
a head coach who, if they start 0-3, he could be gone by October 1st. So they could not be more polar opposite. The roster is built of some guys who are win now, and then it's also, well, the quarterback position, let's try and develop it. It just all doesn't mesh together. It doesn't make sense. It's a smorgasbord. Yeah, exactly.
Just throw it all together.
We're at Golden Corral and just piling a bunch of stuff on our plate. That should not go together and should not be eaten together.
I need to go to the Western Sizzler.
You're going to get home and watching that Bronco game is going to be like,
not good.
I shouldn't have had that, you know, the peel and eat shrimp.
What's wrong with the peel and eat shrimp at Western Sizzler?
Nothing. But if you put it with, you know, the mashed potatoes, that might be a bad
extra well done steak.
Yes.
That's not a good mixture there. Look, I mean, I'm with you. It's you know, the way they're navigating this thing is not ideal, certainly. And it's a lot of different parts and pieces here. When you look at Vic with George Payton, you look at how George Payton's handled this roster. I mean, you know, my question to you is, what would you prefer to do? What would you prefer George Payton to do in this situation? Because he's straddling that line. Would you prefer him to be, you know, all in and ultra aggressive to try to help Vic out as much as possible, or take the more conservative approach and, you know, watch Von Miller go? not re-sign Shelby Harris. Just start kind of re-evaluating this roster in year one, and then you start making big moves in year two and rebuilding this roster up that way. What would you have preferred his route be?
Well, I'm going to take a third option here. The way they should have gone.
Taking none of the above?
No, it's mostly route two. It mostly should have been a rebuild, go young. But there's no reason to keep Vic Fangio around to go that route. Because you're setting him up for failure. It's not gonna work. I think they should have kind of just hit the reset button, done what they did in San Francisco, put the GM and the head coach on the same timeline, the same path. You start rebuilding and you go from there. It just would have avoided this mess.
Well, I don't mind Vic being here, especially if you went with a younger roster. Like, okay, you as a GM now have a whole year to figure out who you want your coach to be, right? And take time and be patient and kind of figure out what coach might be best for your roster and what direction you're heading. And it's not like, okay, I just got hired, you know, and whenever he got hired, now I got to hire a coach here in the next 2 weeks. And it's a kind of rush process. In this situation where if Vic was still the coach and you knew he was out of the door, now you have time. You have time to be patient. You have time to kind of figure out who you want to be and make sure that you make the right pick.
The only reason I didn't say aggressive, because normally I would have gone that route, and I do like this roster. It's why I picked him to go 10-6 a year ago. I think there's a lot of talent on this team. And I would have said, go be aggressive. Go get Matthew Stafford. Mortgage the future if you have to for Matthew Stafford, Aaron Rodgers, whatever. I'm not 100% sure, even if Matthew Stafford is here, that Vic Fangio doesn't find a way to screw it up. That would be my worry, is you mortgage your future, you trade away draft picks, you're all in to win now, but you don't have the right guy in place to win now, and then you're kind of, you know, SOL on two fronts, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I understand that because Vic hasn't given us the hope that, you know, he's the right guy. And so how can I push back against that thought process there that, you know what, you might have everything, but Vic is gonna, you know, figure out how to screw up a couple wins for you and turn them into losses. So it's hard for me to argue that, unfortunately, but that's what we've gone through. And when you talk about a guy that's just predominantly, you know, on the defensive side of the football and just kind of that's where he goes and that's where he stays, you know, and then we got Pat Shurmur as our offensive coordinator. I promise I wasn't going to say anything bad about him until, you know, I'm going to give him a fresh evaluation this year. So all I'm going to say is we got Pat Shurmur as offensive coordinator.
Okay, fair enough.
A negative there. But, there's questions there. There are questions there also, like we all know in Broncos country. So it's, you know, it could be a disaster. And we could just look around and say, what else could we expect with this situation?
Yeah, you know, in while we're on the quarterback topic, you mentioned Aaron Rodgers, and I think our guy Richie Carney, I think he wrote a good piece at DenverFan.com.
That's solid.
Three pieces I've plugged here in the first segment, which
it was solid.
Pretty good.
I tore it apart a little bit, but it was a solid piece.
But in terms of the theory that Aaron Rodgers needs to be willing to be the bad guy, I think is spot on. And here's how I think he can be the bad guy. If you stay away, it's not a problem. You show up at camp, and then it's just you're just a pain in the neck. Everybody's asking you about it all the time. All that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, I got my thoughts on it also, you know, on that piece. And I think I disagree with you there, James, a little bit on your take there. Like, Richie's on the right path, but he kind of, you know, swerved in the wrong direction. And I kind of got to pick that apart a little bit.
Should Aaron Rodgers be willing to be the bad guy? We'll get Stokes' take on that coming up next.
Live from the Widget Castle Pines, site of today's stop on Michelob Ultra's Fan Golf Tour, presented by Superbook Sports and the GC Lounge. Here's Brandon Stokely and DenverFan.com's James Marillac.
Stoke, our guy Richie Carney wrote an interesting piece that you can read at DenverFan.com, where he talks about the fact that Aaron Rodgers needs to be willing to be the bad guy in this situation. So far, both the team and Rodgers have kind of tried to, you know, make sure they're not burning any bridges, not looking bad in front of the fans, you know, kind of playing the PR game here with this whole situation. But Richie pointed out a bunch of examples in the history of sports where, you know, a player wanted out, forced the issue, and you know what? It worked out pretty well for him, whether it's John Elway not wanting to play in Baltimore, he ends up coming to Denver. Eli Manning not wanting to play in San Diego, he goes to New York. All the way back to Reggie Jackson not wanting to continue to play for Finley in Oakland, and he ends up in New York and becomes Mr. October. It can work, and you'll be the bad guy for a short amount of time.
Right.
And you'll look bad. But at the end of the day, you know, 5 years after he retires, he'll be rolling into Green Bay. They'll be retiring his number, and all will be forgotten.
See,
I think it's a pretty good plan.
No, I got it, and I understand it. Here's the issue for me. Green Bay is different than a lot of those places you named there. And when you look at quarterback position, obviously that's different. Now, Elway and Eli, they never played it down for, you know, San Diego and the Colts. They never played it down. They forced their way out. That's fine. Aaron Rodgers has a legacy in Green Bay. Do you want to ruin that by, you know, acting like a fool and forcing your way out of town? And, you know, that legacy is different there than anywhere else. You're talking about Green Bay, you know, like, you know, Lambeau Field. I mean, the home of football, won the first ever Super Bowl, right?
Yeah, and first two.
The history there that they have, and especially when it comes to the quarterback position, Bart Starr, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers. I mean, do you want to screw around with that? I don't think that you do. So that's why I think this approach for a guy like Aaron Rodgers, that's why he's trying to walk the fine line, because he
right.
doesn't want to mess up. You know, how long has he been there? 16 years? He
yeah.
doesn't want to mess up 16 years of playing great football, you know, winning a Super Bowl, doing a lot of great things, by all of a sudden now just being a complete jerk about wanting out of town.
Yeah, but he's not getting anywhere. Right? Like, at this point, he either is going to have to play somewhere he said he doesn't want to play, which you've already, you know, made that painfully evident. So he's either going to have to play there, or he's going to have to sit out. If he really wants to play this year, and he really wants to play somewhere other than Green Bay this year, I don't think he has much choice but to be the bad guy. And if he shows up for camp, well, now they're paying him, right? They're not finding him. They're going to have to pay him.
Yeah.
And we've all worked with that guy who, you know what, he's still showing up for work, but it's pretty clear he wants to be sent packing. But he's going to make it management's decision, not his. You can show up and be that guy
yeah.
and check the box, but and not get fined.
You definitely can. But if you're Aaron Rodgers, yeah, he's always said he loves his teammates. He loves his coaches. He has no issue with them. Do you want to sabotage Davante Adams? Do you want to sabotage, you know, him going into his last year of his contract? Do you want to just sabotage your football team? You know, you're the captain of that ship by going there and just checking the box and not being all in. I think that's the worst look, you know, that you can have. Now, if you want to be a malcontent and, you know, make a big fuss about certain things, I get it. But if you go in there and you show up and you're not 100% committed, that's the worst thing you can do if you're Aaron Rodgers.
Well, and I'm not suggesting he does this all season long. I think you go in and, you know, you try this tactic for a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, see if they'll trade you here, you know, at the end of July or first week in August. Yeah, I don't think he goes in and tanks it in regular season games. I don't think he would do that. But him not showing up at all is sabotaging Davante Adams and his teammates just as much as showing up and, you know, being a malcontent. I mean, either way, if Davante Adams is catching passes from Jordan Love week one, His chances of putting up big numbers in a contract year are as sabotaged as much as, you know, Aaron Rodgers rolling in and being difficult for a week.
Well,
I don't think it changes it all that much.
Well, I just think that this situation's unique. It's pretty much a one-of-one with Aaron Rodgers, and that's why he's navigating it this way. And what can he do to really force his way out of Green Bay right now with still trying to keep your reputation intact? I mean, that's a big deal there, you know. It's not like he's only been there 2 years or 4 years. I mean, he's been there his whole career, done a lot of great things there. And you don't want to force your way out and leave on bad terms and have that fan base just totally turn against you. I think that's one of the big reasons why he is navigating it the way that he's doing it, is because of the Packers organization and, you know, looking at his legacy there. You don't want to
have that tainted because of, you know, acting like a complete fool here, you know, with only a couple years left in your career. So I think this is a one of one, James. And so it's an outlier. I do understand it, though. I mean, I get where Richie's going. I get where you're saying there, like, you know, Antonio Brown route with Pittsburgh. You know, you take that type of approach and you just be James Harden in Houston. And but I think with Aaron Rodgers, it's just different because of who he is and what he's done for the Packers and that organization and the history that they have there.
I guess I just look at this situation, and I don't know what other route he could go if he doesn't choose to go that direction, other than just sitting there and hoping that the Packers just try to be nice and say, all right, you want to be somewhere else, we're going to send you somewhere else for this season. I'm not sure what other tactic he could possibly have at this point.
Just keep your fingers crossed. Right. I mean, he doesn't have the leverage. Ultimately, he doesn't have the leverage in this situation. That's the thing, is the player, you can, you know, act a certain way, you can do certain things, but ultimately it's the organization's choice. If they don't want to trade you, they don't have to trade you. You can do whatever you want. But, you know, obviously it will cause issues for them also, you know, with distractions and all that type of things. But if they don't want to trade you, they don't have to trade you. So ultimately, it's not his decision to be made. It's the Packers organization, and they don't seem like they're going to trade him. So I don't know if he can do anything to be traded.
Yeah.
They might be so dug in that no matter what he does, they might not want to trade him. And we don't know. We don't know how dug in he is.
Right.
He might show up first day.
And it's why the COVID opt-out was an interesting deadline, because it was a piece of leverage he could have theoretically played, and he chose not to. So we'll see how it all shakes out. Speaking of COVID, there is some breaking news from Tom Pelissero that just came out on Twitter. The NFL has informed clubs that if a game cannot be rescheduled during the 18-week season in 2021 due to a COVID outbreak among unvaccinated players, the team with the outbreak will forfeit the game and will be credited with a loss for playoff seeding, per sources. That is a that's a big piece of news. So if you know, last year, especially early in the year, we saw a bunch of games get rescheduled. The Broncos game with the Patriots and the Dolphins and the Chargers, they kind of had to reshuffle them. If they get to a point where, hey, they can't play it and it's impossible to move things around and use teams' bye weeks, you're just going to have to take an L. They're not going to, you know.
Well, it doesn't look like they're going to move things around for bye weeks.
Doesn't look like that at all.
You either play here, or if you can't play here because you have an outbreak, you're forfeiting.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that's what it looks like this year. They're not moving games to byes and trying to do like what we saw last year with the Broncos got, you know, they got screwed in that situation with the Patriots. But one more thing on this Aaron Rodgers thing before we get in that, I just got to ask you a question. Do you think he just could outright just say, just retire? Just retire. Do you think that? I mean, where do you think that's on the list? Because I'm thinking about that. I'm watching him in the match. He looks checked out to a certain degree. Doesn't look like he's in great shape. He hasn't been grinding.
The photos of him in Hawaii didn't look like he'd been working out a whole lot.
Exactly. So, I mean, he might just say, you know what? I'm out. I'm out, and this is my way to get out. I'm enjoying. I'm about to get married. Got a fiance. I'm living the good life. I'm having a great time. I'm done.
Go out on an MVP season, short of winning the Super Bowl and riding off into the sunset. That's about as good as you could do.
Yep.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, quirky enough. What did they call him? Something fella.
Complicated.
Yeah. I think he's a complicated enough fella that he could potentially do that and just, you know, walk out. You can get that complicated fella shirt too at DenverFan.com.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we got him too. You know, Bronco orange and blue.
I've green and yellow. Tapped out my limit on that. I bought three Marilatch clown shirts, and I brought a it's Michael, not Mike Malone shirt. I got to save up a little bit more before
not
I go
adding
back to
the collection
fan store.
Okay,
but
no, I think he could certainly
back.
I think he could certainly walk away, retire, and just say I'm done with it. If I can't go play somewhere where I want to play, and it's a situation where I'm going to be happy, I'm going to walk out, and I'm going to make the Packers be the bad guy.
That's
and
it.
Come try and get my signing bonus money.
That's right.
Just like Calvin Johnson did with the Lions, right? Like, I get it. I owe you signing bonus money, but you be the bad guy. You take the PR hit. You come chase me down, one of your all-time great players, and try to get that money back.
And not only that, yes, they look like the bad people. They want to come get the money from Aaron Rodgers, I guess, to certain people. But they look like the bad people now in this, you know, Aaron Rodgers versus the front office. They made him retire.
Right.
They made
right.
him retire. They forced him out. They forced him out by screwing up that relationship, by picking Jordan Love, not giving him a first-round pick and 10 or 11 drafts on the offensive side of the football. And they messed that relationship up enough that he retired. They're at fault, not him.
It's very similar, and I get the organizations. You know, the Lions have been bad, and the Packers, for the most part, have been a really good organization. But very few people blame Barry Sanders for retiring early.
That's right.
Very few people blame Calvin Johnson for retiring early. It was, man, if the Lions would have done a better job and not made this frustrating for those guys for a decade, they probably would have stuck it out, and if there was any kind of hope, they would have stuck it out. A little different here because you're coming off a team that went to the NFC title game and they were 13-3. Like, it's a good team. You're not walking out because it's hopeless.
Right.
But I do think, you know, fans tend to side with the players over management all the time anyway. I think in this instance, they definitely would as well. All right, Stoke, it is parade day in Milwaukee. Is that good news for Nuggets fan or bad news? We'll talk about that coming up next.
Live from the Widget Castle Pines, site of today's stop on Michelob Ultra's Fan Golf Tour, presented by Superbook Sports and the GC Lounge. Here's Brandon Stokely and DenverFan.com's James Marillac.
Stokely, Milwaukee Bucks are having their championship parade today. Well, it's kind of fun to see the highlights from that, right? Which guy's going to go a little too far? Who's going to say something in the speech that, you know, kind of goes viral? But good
for
them.
Fun.
Another exciting day in the city of Milwaukee. There's two ways to look at this. So I tend to look at it in terms of a Nuggets fan. There's two ways to look at it. I tend to look at it from the positive angle of it shows that it's possible to win in a mid-market, right?
Yes.
Milwaukee's a little smaller than Denver, but it's, you know, it's not night and day. They're kind of in that same group of middle of the country, flyover city, not L.A., not New York, not the big markets. So it's possible to win there. The other part of it that's encouraging is the hardest part when you're a mid-market team is step one, and that's getting the foundation. And the foundation is, hey, you got to have a couple of great players. And you got to get kind of lucky when you're a mid-market team to get there. And Milwaukee got a little lucky with Giannis, who was the 15th pick, and Middleton, who they technically got in a trade, but they developed him. He was the 37th pick. They turn into two stars, and then you can start adding around them.
You got to draft one.
Yeah, exactly.
Because you're not going to attract one if you're not a really good team.
But the Nuggets have that, right? They have Jokic, who they got at 41, and he's developed into an MVP. They have Jamal Murray, who they got at 7, and he's turned into a guy who can have multiple 50-point games in the playoffs. Like, they have those two pieces. But it's, you know, you got to do the other things. The Bucks were willing to, you know, push their chips in on Jrue Holiday. They were willing to make some, you know, key free agent acquisitions. Nothing crazy, but Brooke Lopez and Bobby Portis and guys like that. They had the 7th highest payroll in the NBA this year. So, you know, they went it all in when they knew they had a window.
Yes.
That's the encouraging part. The negative way to look at it, or the discouraging part, was this was the year. This was the year where someone else could break through,
right?
Because the super teams had injuries and, you know, all the things just kind of made it strange, and the Nuggets missed their opportunity. How do you look at it? Is it the positive side of like, okay, here's the model, let's go, or is it the negative side of you had a one-year shot and you blew it, or your injury, or whatever?
It's both for me. You know, yeah, this was the year.
So you're pulling a me, and you're going with C?
Yes.
And an A, B choice?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
I learned from you, James, last segment. It's definitely both, though, because, yes, this was the year. You know, like, I don't know what next year is going to look like, but it probably won't be as easy as a path as this year. You know, the East and the West, you know, you look at the Nets and the injuries they had. So Milwaukee, you know, they hit it, and it was a perfect storm, and they did what they had to do to win it. But certainly it's not getting any easier for them next year with the Nets. And, you know, you look at the West and Lakers, Clippers, and Warriors, what are those teams going to look like? So I think you look at it from that perspective, like, yes, we missed out on a big opportunity this year. But I also think that with a couple nice moves made by the Nuggets, that, you know what, you could be one of those teams that, you know, like, even if the Lakers are healthy, okay, let's go. I mean, the Nuggets are right there. They got to be healthy, and they have to continue to develop Michael Porter Jr. That's a big part of it, because you're not going to do it with just Jamal and the Joker. You're not going to do it. So you need Porter Jr. to continue to develop, and then you got to find those role players. Like you said, Lopez, Bobby Porter, Portis Jr. Junior, right? Or did I just throw that on there for the heck of it?
It sounds right. Sure, we're gonna roll with it.
Okay, yeah, we'll roll with it. I'll just throw Junior on there. Maybe it's a senior.
There's Otto Porter Jr.
There we go.
They get very confusing to me.
Yeah, there you go. You got him, and he played great for him, especially in Game 6. They made the move and traded all those picks and assets for Drew Holiday. And so you look at the moves that they made that paid off. I mean, the Nuggets have to, you know, be willing to be aggressive like that and make those types of moves to maybe go get another guy to pair with this group, and then you got to have those role players.
Well, I think it's a crucial offseason for the Nuggets, and I think last season was as well, right? You're coming off the Western Conference Finals, and they blew it. Now, people can make excuses for them all they want, but they went into the offseason, and whether it was locally, nationally, everything you read, the number one offseason priority for the Nuggets last year was retain Jeremy Grant. That's what everyone said. So if you fail to do that, then your offseason is a disaster, right? Then you're scrambling and finding Jamichael Green, and you're bringing back Paul Millsap when you didn't plan to, and you're trying to patch it together. That threw everything off. It forced them to have to make the Aaron Gordon trade at the deadline, where if they'd have had Jeremy Grant, they could have just kept what they had, and they'd have still had Gary Harris, they'd have still had R.J. Hampton. Like, it had a ripple effects. They blew it last year by not keeping together that Western Conference Finals team, you know, with Mason Plumlee leaving, with Torrey Craig leaving, who was in the finals. So that was a bad offseason. You can't do it two offseasons in a row.
Yeah.
I think they have to look at it and say, look, we've got that foundation. We know Jokic and Murray are great. We think Michael Porter Jr. is going to turn into that. But the other piece of this is you could use Michael Porter Jr. as that trade bait. Just say, look, we're not going to wait for him to develop. We're not going to give him a max contract and hope he turns into that star. We're going to parlay him into Bradley Beal.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, how good is that big three at that point of Jokic, Murray, Beal? Someone like that. Okay.
I like where you're going.
Now you're playing to win now.
Yeah. I like that thought process there where you just, hey, we're not going to wait any longer for this thing to mature. You know, this might be another few years before we see the best of him, and we don't know what that's going to be. Is that going to be elite? Is that going to be solid?
Right.
You know, we've seen the ups and downs early on, so I don't think anybody can project. You can be optimistic about it, but it's hard to project that he's going to be, you know, a true superstar. I mean, I think we would have seen more from him. Could he be a really good player? Yeah, but we haven't seen that yet consistent enough. So maybe you look at it from the Nuggets perspective and say, let's flip this guy and use him as one of the big pieces to go make a move like that and add a true, you know, veteran player that we know more about and that we think will be a good fit. You look at the move with Aaron Gordon, giving up, what did they give up for him? And what did you think about his fit and him moving forward? I mean, he started off great, and then it kind of fizzled out a little bit to me.
I really liked his fit when Jamal was healthy. Man, as the fourth guy and kind of the guy who got the dirty work points, right, where you didn't have to run plays for him, but he was just active and would get, you know, offensive rebounds or it'd be the lobs and it would be that kind of stuff. I thought he was a great fit. I thought once Jamal went out and they needed to rely on him more, he clearly showed us he's not that kind of a scorer. So they have a decision to make with him, too, because he's heading into, I believe, into the final year of his deal.
Yeah.
I just don't want to let the Nuggets off the hook here and let them go cheap and say, hey, we've got a very entertaining team, right? We spent money on Jamal. We spent money on Jokic. People are going to come down to Pepsi Center to watch this team. We're not going all in to win it. We're going to be good but not great. I don't want to let them off the hook.
Well, you're not. I mean, what they've done doesn't say they're going cheap. I mean, they made the move for Aaron Gordon, right? I mean, so you got to remember that. I mean, they ponied up. They could have been conservative and not made a move. So that to me signals that team isn't going cheap. That they're looking to try to win now. They're looking to try to add the right pieces. They know they're going to have to pay Aaron Gordon to keep him here. And you know, after this year, and they're going to be willing to do it. They're hoping that they're going to have to pay Michael Porter Jr. So I look at it and say, hey, this team, it hasn't gone cheap. They're trying to win now. the best that they can. They do have their hands tied a little bit, attracting free agents, so that you got to be creative and make other moves.
See, I don't buy that. I don't buy that logic. They have their hands tied. I think we're making excuses for them. I think we're giving Tim Connelly and company a free pass. I think they did go cheap. And here, okay. I think when you the Jeremy Grant spin to me is laughable, right?
Why?
Everybody just says, well, they made him the same offer and he left because he wanted a bigger role.
Well, of course. Didn't he say that?
The team said that. I don't know that I've heard Jeremy Grant come out and say that. Okay. I've also heard people say, he didn't like Denver because of, you know, the diversity makeup of the city, things like that. It's like you're just making excuses for the Nuggets. Like, if he's your number one priority, you should have put an offer in front of him right out of the gate that he's going to jump at, and you got that accomplished. But if you try to go cheap and Detroit comes in with $20 million a year and then you match it, well, now you've missed your boat, right? And you can say technically, well, you know, we offered him the same money. Yeah, but you came in at the 11th hour.
Well, we don't know how it went down.
We don't.
We don't know. So.
We don't, but just to say they offered him the same amount of money is giving him a free pass. But they let Mason Plumlee, Jeremy Grant, Torrey Craig walk out the door. They replace him with JaMychal Green, Isaiah Hartenstein, and an over-the-hill Paul Millsap.
Well,
that's going cheap.
Well, at a certain point, you know, you got to flip the roster a little bit. And, you know, come on. I mean, Plumlee, I mean, like, you think we really missed him last year?
He would have been better against the Suns as someone on the inside, somewhat of a rim protector, than what they had.
Somewhat of a rim protector.
Yeah.
I like the way that you phrased that. My lasting memory of him was pointing towards Anthony Davis for, you know, on the phantom screen, and forgot who it was to get out there, and there was no screen set, and Anthony Davis put the dagger in the Nuggets. So that's my lasting memory of Plum Dog. But look, you can't keep everybody together all the time. You just can't keep. You got to flip the back end of the roster over to a certain degree. To me, it goes down more to the core. I don't know what Jeremy Grant wanted. He was going to get paid from somebody. He's a
right.
good player, so he was going to get paid. Did he want to be more the focal point? Did the Nuggets not, you know, give him a great offer to begin with? Did they come in late? I don't know. But I also know that, you know, he was here, and from my perspective, I'd look at it and say that guy wanted out. That guy wanted to go somewhere to be a star and be the focal point. He never was going to have that here, because why else would you leave Denver to go to Detroit?
I don't know.
Why else?
But there are two reasons, right? Because it's same amount of money, live in Detroit, live in Denver. Play on a bad team, play on a contender. That seems like an easy decision to me.
Yep.
So the only reason you would make the decision to go to Detroit and play on a bad team is you wanted to be the focal point, which is the spin the team put out, and everybody's run with it like, you know, it was etched in a tablet and brought down from a mountain, which I'm just not buying. Or it's a you offended him. You offended
come on,
him.
James.
That's an option that nobody considers. And
you
I
offended
think,
him. I mean, come on. If you wanted to
him.
Be here, if you wanted to be, you think they really lowballed him? He was priority one for them. I can't see them lowballing him after they traded for him and brought him in. That he was priority number one. Why would you lowball him? That makes no sense at all. I mean, they're smarter than that. They've made great moves. They're trying to win now. Priority one, James. They're not going to lowball him. Come on, you got to get over that.
Walmart money is always Walmart money. I think they lowballed him.
No, come on.
I'm sticking to that until I see proof otherwise. All right, hey, we touched on it a little bit earlier. There's some breaking news related to COVID protocols that will impact the NFL this year. We'll tell you what they are. We'll tell it how it may or may not impact the Broncos. That's coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 104.3thefan.com.